Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Of this community. They were at this temple nearly every day and every week. 8 men and 3 women were killed. The youngest was 54, the oldest was 97. They include a married couple, 2 brothers, and a doctor, all beloved by their synagogue and their neighborhood. Nikki Batiste looked at the lives that they led. She's nearly outside the Tree of Life. She's here with me right now, actually, and so many incredible stories you hear about these people whose lives were taken.
They were unbelievable people. Many of the victims lived in this Jewish community their entire lives. One couple even got married at the Tree of Life Synagogue here 62 years ago. The 11 victims each have different stories and different backgrounds, but their shared impact here will not be forgotten.
He would give the shirt off your back. He would help anybody that needed help.
Stephen Hall says faith was everything to his uncle Daniel Stein. And when Hall received an alert of an active shooter at the Tree of Life Synagogue Saturday morning, he feared the worst.
Right away, my heart sank. I called my aunt right away and she picked up the phone and was yelling, "Stephen, I can't get a hold of him." I said, "Let me try." And we tried to call and I got nothing but a voicemail.
Dr. Jerry Rabinowitz was a highly respected doctor in the area. His friend and colleague, Dr. Tracy Levy, described him as loving.
What was he like?
Very kind and caring and concerning, and just a real human being. And we would use the word mensch.
Joyce Feinberg was a research specialist at the University of Pittsburgh's Learning Research and Development Center. The staff there called her an engaging, elegant, and warm person. 65-year-old Dennis Richard Gottfried had just celebrated his 38th wedding anniversary. In a tweet, his nephew Jacob said, "Today I lost an important person in my life. My uncle was murdered doing what he loved, praying to God." And brothers Cecil and David Rosenthal, who both were special needs adults, were mainstays at the Tree of Life Synagogue, attending services weekly.
I knew Cecil. We're family friends.
Rabbi Morty Rudolph called Cecil sweet and kind.
People of all abilities are very much a part of the community. It's all kind of part of that fabric of what the community is. You know, Cecil was as well.
Funerals in the Jewish religion are usually soon after someone passes away, but the coroner's office will have to balance its investigative findings with the burials. And Biana, the first funeral is scheduled for tomorrow for the Rosenthal brothers. And one resident here told me Cecil Rosenthal was like the honorary mayor of this town.
These two brothers, everyone loved these two brothers. And I think the Yiddish word mensch is something that we're all going to be using here as we talk about these people whose lives were taken. And of course, thank you, Nikki. We'll have much more ahead from Pittsburgh, including a conversation by CBS Evening News anchor Jeff.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. As you've been listening, that were the names of the victims in Pittsburgh. 11 people were murdered Saturday for being Jewish in their synagogue while they were praying. The killer went from sanctuary to sanctuary shouting, "All Jews must die," and set out to do just that. It was the greatest attack on a Jewish community in the United States of America in American history. It occurred one day after a man was arrested in Florida for sending bombs to President Obama, to Hillary Clinton, to prominent Democrats, senators, attorney general, to even actors like Robert De Niro. Basically, a whole bunch of Trump critics, including, turns out, George Soros, who is attacked not only for being a Trump critic, but for being a Holocaust survivor, for being Jewish. And this occurred a couple days after another attack in Kentucky from a white man who tried to enter a black church, did not succeed. So he shot a couple of black people at a nearby grocery store. When the cops came to take him down, he said, "Wait, no, no, white people don't shoot at white people." What have we become? What are we as a nation? Who are we? How is it that we have this terrible scar? It's not even a scar. It's an open wound. An open wound in the heart and soul of who we are as a country. Anti-Semitic violence in the United States, violence, vandalism, desecration, is up 57% from what it was last year, according to the Anti-Defamation League. 57%! That's not a normal increase. Where I live in Northern Virginia, in a county I represent, Fairfax County, just, what, 2-3 weeks ago? I didn't even report it. It was ordinary. A Jewish community center was painted with swastikas all over it. What are we becoming? Who is causing this? I mean, we've always had racism. We've always had anti-Semitism. Those certainly aren't new things in America. But doesn't it seem like things that happened once every decade, and then once every few years, and then once a year, are now coming month by month, week by week, day by day? Sometimes it's blacks, sometimes it's gay people. Remember the bar in Orlando? The guy that murdered the Jews of Pittsburgh did so, weirdly, not trying to get in the mind of a horrible human being, but apparently he found out about HIAS, H-I-A-S, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is the oldest immigrant help organization in the country. It dates back to the 1800s. HIAS helped my great-grandparents when they first arrived in the United States. My great-grandfather, according to the Ellis Island Manifest, didn't have enough money. If you had $50, they didn't have to watch you. But if you had less than $50, and he had less than $50 net worth in 1906, you had to put how much you had. He had $20, and who you would turn to so you didn't become a public charge. HIAS helped my great-grandparents more than 100 years ago find their way in America. These were Jews helping Jews. Jews helping Jewish immigrants. Fresh off the boat, didn't speak English, trying to find their way in America. HIAS has changed over the years. Still helps Jewish immigrants. But actually, most of the immigrants it helps aren't Jewish anymore. It used to be an aid organization to help Jewish immigrants, and now it's a Jewish organization helping all immigrants. Apparently, that's what made this mass murderers so angry. Hayes was reaching out to help refugees, to help people, more people, come, follow, and achieve the American dream. Apparently, that set this man off. I've been thinking about Pittsburgh and, this whole hate-filled country we live in. It's more hate than I can recall in my lifetime. More Americans at each other's throats. And frankly, more racial, religious. More American against American. Now, I don't think it's a coincidence that we live in a time when the president is trying to divide us more than any other president, certainly in my lifetime. But it's deeper than that. And, Saturday night, I couldn't sleep. Just couldn't sleep. And about 2 in the morning, I wrote a poem, really just to set out my thoughts. And then I could sleep. I'm going to read to you that poem when we come back. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. If you want to call in, we'll be right back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal America. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I want to read to you a poem that I wrote in the middle of the night that I call Pittsburgh Reflections. I am a Jew. I know some want to take my life for being a Jew. I learned about Anne Frank when I was just 5 years old. I've imagined living in the concentration camps. I've imagined dying in the gas chambers. I've confronted anti-Semitism worldwide. I remember a Swiss synagogue on Yom Kippur where they told us to disperse quickly after services in case someone threw a bomb at us as we left. I was struck by this. I didn't think at the time it would happen in America. I'm proud of being an American because America took us in, took my family in more than a century ago. We came here so that anti-Semites wouldn't kill us. I know we've had anti-Semitism in America much worse than we have today. I know that the first America firsters loved the Nazis and hated Jews. I know that Americans in the 40s hated Jews worse than the Germans and the Japanese. I also know that since the Holocaust, there is no safer, freer, more wonderful place than the United States of America to be a Jew. I am a gay man. I know some want to take my life for being a gay man. I remember the day Matthew Shepard was crucified. I've imagined what I would have done in that Wyoming bar. I've imagined being impaled on a fence for hour after long hour, dying slowly alone. I know dozens of gay men and women who were kicked by their families out of their homes, or tortured by so-called Christians, trying to convert them to heterosexuality against their will. I'm proud of how far we've come. I'm proud of my work helping to bring equality to the gay community, cultural equality, marriage equality. I'm aware of how far we have yet to go. I'm aware of the greater hate the transgender community faces. I know that compared to trans folk, it is far easier to be a gay man. I'm not black, but I know that some want to take the lives of people just for being black, for driving while black, for walking while black, for wearing a hoodie while black, for confronting a police officer while black, or protesting police violence while black. When the KKK burns a cross, they do not terrorize one black family, they terrorize an entire community. I'm proud of how far we've come. I'm proud of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. But I also know, with voter suppression laws and drug laws that criminally punish crack users, but not opioid users, that we have a long way to go before we can say we have equality in America for blacks. I'm not a woman. I don't particularly fear walking alone at night. I walk women to their cars at night, as my mother taught me to do. We both know why I'm walking them to their cars at night. We don't say why, but we know. It's because women face daily the real and present fear of sexual assault and domestic violence. And yet the danger is even greater from friends, families, and acquaintances than from strangers. I know the stigma that goes along with being a survivor. I know the pain of losing a sister to domestic violence. I'm proud of the Me Too movement for drawing attention, but I also know the battle is far from over. I can't imagine what it is like to fear every social encounter may end in violence. But I want to try to imagine. I want to stand up as a man for women, as well as for male victims of sexual assault. I want to stand up for women in the workplace and for women who want their bodies free of men's control over them. I'm not a woman, but I will always stand with women. I am an American. I've always been an American, and I was born here. I'm proud to be an American. Not in a country music song, facile kind of way, but because America is the land that took my family in more than a century ago. My great-grandparents had nothing in their pockets but the American dream, which they and their descendants realized. And while I'm not an immigrant, I imagine their travails. Like my great-grandparents, they are escaping violence, seeking a safe place. They don't speak English that well yet, but the smiles on their faces tell it all. No matter how hard it is to get here, no matter how hard it is to be here, they know that only in America can their dreams be made. It's the one place in the world where you can start all over again as an immigrant and become an American. I'll finish my poem after the break. The next line, I'm a Southern man. Right back after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I was reading a poem when we had to go to break. A poem that I wrote Saturday night after the massacre in Pittsburgh called Pittsburgh Reflections. In the poem, I talk about, that as a Jew, people want to kill me for being a Jew. That as a gay man, people want to kill me for being a gay man. That people want to kill blacks for being black. That people want to kill women and sexually assault them for nothing else but being women. And that immigrants come here to be safe. Although, this particular killer didn't like immigrants very much. I'm now going to read the last stanza of my poem. I'm a Southern man from Nashville, Tennessee. I understand the pride of a poor white Southern man, self-reliant salt of the earth, whose family never owned slaves. I understand the arrogance of a rich white Southern man, who's proud that his family did own slaves, but has never really considered the harm his family did to innocent people. It's not hard to find a Southern man who carries the Dixie flag as a point of pride or a wink at rebellion. He doesn't much like blacks or Jews or gays or immigrants. He doesn't much like Yankees either. He doesn't believe in treating women equally with men. That's just not how he was taught. It wouldn't be chivalrous. No, it's not all Southern men. But it is a substantial number. All too many. I understand Southern pride. Southerners don't like know-it-alls. Southerners don't like Yankee-splaining any more than women like mansplaining. And they often take it out on politicians in Washington, even the ones they themselves elect. For some white Southerners, a gun is the ultimate in self-reliance. There is a Southern man who thinks nothing can hurt him if he owns a gun. But a gun is not a shield. Emotions and financial worry and sickness and struggling rural communities creep past his gun and enter his soul. There's great pain in the soul of many a Southern man. I strive to understand cultures I am from. I strive to understand cultures not my own. I'm a Southern, gay, Jewish man who strives to empathize with a black immigrant woman. In other words, I'm an American. This poem is dedicated to the memory of the Pittsburgh 11. We all inhabit various silos, various forms of identity, man, woman, gay, straight, transgender, Christian, Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, agnostic, no religion, cultural Christian, lapsed Catholic, Orthodox Jew, was raised Jewish, but I don't really know anything. All kinds. Black, white, half black, half white, like Barack Obama. People don't often talk about his half white side. It's the side that raised him. Latino, which can be black or white, Asian American, Native American, the only Americans who have a right to complain about immigrants. When the white man came on the shores of Jamestown or Plymouth Rock, they didn't follow the law. They didn't ask permission. They weren't even nice about it. They came in, they invaded, they shot their way into power. Native Americans have a right to complain about immigrants. But the rest of us don't. Why is it that Americans are so quick to forget their own immigrant heritage? Some 85% of us are descended from immigrants. maybe 12, 13% descended from slaves, or 1 or 2% from the native populations that were here. We're mostly an immigrant nation. Of course, the slaves were immigrants, too, from Africa. Just not willingly. We are who we are. And who we are is not our destiny. As I say in the poem, not all Southern men are racist. Not all Southern men own a gun. Not all Southern men hate Jews or women or blacks or gay people. And there's plenty of hate outside the South. I just know what I know. I know my own experience. I know my life experience. I know what it's like to live in the South and to be Jewish and to be gay. And I've worked enough with survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault that I think I have some indication of what that's like too. And I've certainly known hundreds of black people, thousands probably, throughout my life. And I try to learn from others' experiences. And I know immigrants. And there's immigrants, and there's first-generation Americans and second-generation Americans. And you know what I find? For all the people that complain about immigrants, yes, sometimes the immigrant has an accent, and sometimes they have it all their lives, but their children never do. Sometimes the immigrant has struggles a bit with English, but their children never do. Their children are as American as you or me, and it doesn't matter whether they have an Asian face or an African face or a Mexican face or an English or French or Icelandic or Australian or Fijian. America's not about what we look like. It's not about what religion we pray to. For all the fear of Muslim Islamic extremists in the Middle East, the vast, vast majority of American Muslims are peaceful because they're American. They grew up here. They respect American democracy. People leave old ways behind. Protestants and Catholics murdered each other in Ireland and came to America and got along. Jews and Arabs fight each other in the Middle East, but we get along just fine here in America. What's happening to our country? We've always had racism. We've always had anti-Semitism. I know that. Heck, in the 1940s, as I say in my poem, anti-Semitism was much worse. My grandfather's neighbor had a swastika painted on his garage in the 40s. In the 40s, a Gallup poll was taken, and this is always shocks people, and some people don't believe me, and they have to look it up, so Google it for yourself. Gallup poll, the oldest poll organization in the country, polled Americans in 1939, 1940, 1941, 42, all throughout the year, the war years, 43, 44, and asked them, who was the greatest enemy of the American people? Who was the greatest danger to America? As you might expect, the Germans, they were up there. The Japanese, maybe because they bombed Pearl Harbor, maybe because, you know, people are more racist. There are a lot of Americans of German heritage. The Japanese were always ranked higher than the Germans. And one group of people was ranked more dangerous, more of an enemy to the American people than the Germans or the Japanese. It was the Jews. And if you have trouble believing me, that's actually a compliment to the United States of America and where we are today and how far we've come in 75 years. Didn't used to be that way. Check your Gallup poll. You'll find the only time the Germans and Japanese were ranked more dangerous than the Jews was the year after Pearl Harbor, 1942. In 40, 41, 43, 44... the Jews were the most dangerous. And that was an idea promoted by the first America firsters. Donald Trump didn't create that slogan. That's a very old slogan, most famously used by hero Charles Lindbergh, that great hero. A hero because he flew a plane from New York to Paris. That was a pretty incredible feat at the time, but just because you're good at flying a plane does not mean you have high moral character. Let's remember that with our athletes and our stars. People can be good at things and not have high moral character. Charles Lindbergh was a Nazi supporter. He hated Jews viciously. He preached that hatred, and he, with his heroic status, led tens of millions of Americans to hate Jews as well, so much so that many Americans actively would have supported a Holocaust in the United States. Now, those days, thankfully, are gone. We are not anywhere close in 2018 to where we were in 1940s America. But when anti-Semitic violence and vandalism increases 57% from one year to the next, we have to be vigilant. The question is why? Why? I mean, Donald Trump has called Mexican rapists. He has mocked disabled persons. He attacks blacks as having low IQ and arguing that they should be fired for protesting police violence. He has 19 women who have accused him of sexual harassment and bragged about sexually assaulting women. He says horrible things about immigrants. Donald Trump, however, and terrible things about gay, particularly transgendered people, whom he wants to take away their civil rights, but he's got a Jewish son-in-law who he loves very much, Jared Kushner. I don't love Jared, but he is Jewish. Why would anti-Semitism increase? That's not really something the president's focused on. I'm willing to admit that. Well, it seems that hating Jews is just part and parcel of every other kind of hate. If you increase hatred of blacks, if you increase hatred of immigrants, if you increase hatred of the rainbow community, the LGBT community, if you increase hatred of women, it kind of goes along with the pack. Some historians call Jews the world's canary in a coal mine. You know about the canary in a coal mine? People went down in the coal mines and they'd bring a canary with them, and if the air started to get poisonous or dangerous, the canary would die first. The men knew to get out because the air was starting to get bad, because the canary needed really, really clean air, and it would die. And if you lost your canary in a coal mine, you were losing air for everyone. If Jews are a country's canary in a coal mine, then when attacks on Jews occur, it means greater violence is around the corner. It means we're in great danger as a country, as Americans. The haters usually just kill the Jews first. I think that's the heart of Pastor Martin Niemöller's quote during the Holocaust. You remember that one. First they came for the trade unionists, then they came for the socialists, then they came for the Jews. But I wasn't any of them. I did not speak out, and then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out. We must speak out. I hope I've made clear in my poem this isn't about just protecting America's very strong Jewish community, the freest Jewish community in the world. It's about protecting African Americans from racist violence and protecting the rainbow community from anti-gay, anti-trans violence, protecting women from sexual assault, misogynistic violence, domestic violence, protecting Buddhists and Muslims and Hindus, really protecting disabled people, mentally ill people. We got to stop the hate. People are people. We're individuals. We have our own differences. We need to celebrate them. We need to strive to understand them. That is what America is about. That is what makes America great. We are not, I say this all the time, we are not a country of a certain language, a certain religion. We're a country just bound by a common set of beliefs that all men and women are created equal, that we all have the rights to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. And if you don't believe that, well, you're un-American. I'll be back after this. Call in if you like, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just a few minutes left. I know I've been pretty down this hour. I've talked about the hatred and despair in America. But you know what? We've gotten through worse. No, we've never had a president who's a traitor or a one so good at dividing us and causing us to hate one another, but we got through a civil war so violent that, well, more Americans died in the Civil War than every other war in American history. We got through a Great Depression. We got through the McCarthy era, which was full of fake news put forward by a powerful Republican senator trying to tar a bunch of innocent people with lies. We got through the big fights over Vietnam, the Civil Rights era, and became a better country for it. The only way out of our morass is with you, the people listening to my voice. There's two things we have to do in this country. We have to dial down the hate, dial it down, speak out. If you hear someone say something racist, anti-Semitic, anti-Muslim, you hear someone say something misogynistic or anti-gay, you have to speak out. You have to let people know that it's wrong. These people are coming out because they think it's okay, because their president encourages them to think it's okay and it's not okay. We have to dampen down the hatred, and we've got to do something about guns. People get in fights all across the country. We're not more violent than the rest of the world. In the UK, they get in fights over football games. That's what they call soccer. And if Manchester United fights a London team and one team loses and the soccer fans don't think that a call was fair, they get these vicious fights in the stands, drunk and everything, but they don't have guns. So people go home bruised, not dead. Our gun laws are impossible at the federal level, the state level. In Virginia, We can't get anywhere with the Republicans in charge. That's why if we elect a Democratic Virginia legislature in 2019, we're going to have a lot of really good, solid laws to get guns out of the hands of dangerous, deranged, hateful people. At the end of the day, the only way we can change anything in America is not through violence. It's through voting. You have an election just a week away. Here's your chance to change who we are as a nation, to change the tone, to change the policies, to have our country come up from the depths of despair. My hope lies in you. It's Mark Levine signing off.